Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Can he do it again? Mike Tibbs.
Gets a touch, and he helps out.
That is a man jam! DeMarcus Cousins nearly brought down the backboard and rim.
You're now listening to the Kings Court Podcast, presented by SackKingsNation.com.
Welcome to the Kings Court Podcast. This is your host, Joe Morgan. Joining me as always, Vince Miracle. Vince, how's it going today?
What's up, Joe? We haven't done a show together in heck of long. Normally, we're either one of us are hosting a guest, but today get to host a guest together today.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Well, first off, Joe, thanks for joining the show. This is the Kings Court Podcast. I'm your host, Vince Miracle, of course, Joe Morgan. This show is brought to you by the Almighty Baller Podcasting Network, and of course, we are sponsored by BrickHouseIndustries.com. Everyone, go to BrickHouseIndustries.com. Check out all of their apparel from hats, shirts, and socks. And when checking out, be sure to use promo code Kings Court, and you will get a 10% discount on any of your purchases. And now, announcing our guest. Me and him have been going back and forth on Twitter. If you guys are up late at night, we were adding each other on Twitter, mainly just because of the Magic iPod thing online. But it then grew to like, hey, we got to get each other on the show. I was like, I definitely got to get this guy on the show. So, former cohort of mine when I used to work with Cowbell Kingdom as well as Joe, Kamani Wallace. David, Kamani, how you doing?
Pretty swell. How you doing, Vince?
Oh, I'm pretty excited to have you on. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm not fully excited only because last night, and this is not because of the interview part. This is mainly just because I have a little bit of anger sent towards Joe right now. Because for those who don't know, I play a lot of FanDuel, and I had Scalabissiere in my lineup last night. But someone on this show, not you, Kamani, but someone on this show told me that I should have played Bielitsa over him, and it cost me a few dollars. But other than that, I'm pretty excited.
I love how he's saying that. I had the lineup that won literally $18,000 last night, and he helped me change it at the last minute. So I don't really want to talk to him
anything.
Either. But,
I didn't do anything.
What's this thing where you win $18,000 with the lineup? What's going on?
If you've never played FanDuel, I'd almost say don't, because it's very addictive, and it gets to a point where me and Vince probably talk at least an hour or so a day about our lineups, and we go over different players and how they're going to perform. And we got it wrong last night. Well, I still made money, but I didn't make the money that I wanted to make. So gotcha. we both have a bitter taste in our mouth this morning.
I thought you cleaned up $18,000 last night. I was like, well, that's a cause for celebration right there.
I mean, if you won $18,000 last night, I'm about to say, hey, Joe, can I borrow a dollar?
with 1 minute left for lineups, I changed it. And the lineup I had before I changed it was the one that won the $18,000. So, So it's a little bitterness in my heart right now. But we march on. We continue. And even today, we've already kind of talked a little bit, and we're going to talk more after this. But me and him will go over and try to set another one. Today, there's a... like a, what is it, $150,000 prize for first place, Vince?
Yeah, $150,000 to first. Hopefully we can win there, and then you and I also might be going head-to-head in draft, and we'll talk about that promo a little bit later. But Kamani, I got to get your thoughts on this, and this is going back to King's conversation. We've done maybe two shows now since the DeMarcus Cousins trade. One was the initial reaction with Joe and I, then I had Jason Ross on. And then we started looking at the draft because that's the next thing you got to do, right? After this trade, you got to start looking forward. But I want to go back. I want to get your thoughts on this deal. I want to know what you thought when you found out DeMarcus Cousins was traded and what this means for the Kings moving forward.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I first heard the news, my heart sank because, it's hard because I have a personal feeling about DeMarcus Cousins, and then I have the feeling about the Kings and how they should address their basketball team.
We're all friends. Let's get both takes.
Yeah. So when it comes to my personal view of DeMarcus, I mean, I've been doing this for about 5 years now, and I've only ever seen a really good person behind the scenes. I've never seen. And his interactions with me have always been friendly. So I have a really hard time buying into the presented narrative about DeMarcus Cousins. I see what happens on the court. I see what can be described as behavioral issues. But to me, it doesn't translate to the person. You know, that's a struggle in his job that he has. in that sense... I've always been kind of a DMC apologetic. I feel that I have a lot in common with his background. And also, I mean, I just look at it from the sense of, in terms of culturally, if you give a 19-year-old kid $5 million, and this happens all across the NBA, you know, there's some chance that they're not mentally equipped to handle that kind of responsibility at that age. So I look at DeMarcus and his development, and I'm looking at his background and how he grew up and how he had to fight to keep his family fed when he was in high school, and all the different roadblocks that were in his way in terms of developing into an adult. And then I see the what is described as behavioral issues on the court. And you know, I see the correlation. I do wish on that same personal level, I wish for DeMarcus's sake that he was able to finish his goal or achieve his goal of being a one-team legacy player in the NBA. There's very, very few players like that. Kobe for one, Dirk. And DeMarcus saw himself as being that for Sacramento. So in that sense, I think it's actually pretty sad. But at the same time, looking at it from a basketball standpoint, the trade makes a lot of sense. And it's just – and I actually thought that the day of. I was looking at it from a basketball standpoint, and it just made a lot of sense.
Did you like the deal, though? Because, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that deal to me, I mean, I understand it. I think Joe and I went over that quite a bit in our reaction shows that – trading DeMarcus Cousins was probably the plan moving forward, and everyone I think was okay with it. But the return, the fact that it's a top three protected pick, the Pelicans aren't playing well, so at some point they're going to probably give up and start tanking games, which is still a possibility where they get to keep their pick, and then Buddy Hield. And then, you know, Tyreek is a free agent. Langston Galloway, I believe, is a free agent at the end of this year. So really it's just Buddy Hield in that first-round pick that's top three protected, which the Pelicans aren't doing that well. They can have a chance to retain it. And the Buddy Hield, I like Buddy Hield. I think he's definitely showing signs of potential. When his feet are set, I mean, and he's behind the arc, that thing is going down. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see a shooter back on the court. But again, he doesn't look like he has all-star potential. And that's just from these last few games. Of course, it's a small sample size here. I mean, his rookie season has been a roller coaster ride as is. But did you like the deal the Kings got in return for DeMarcus Cousins?
I'm not the first to have this comment on it. I think if it had been done over summer, right before the draft, you would have a lot less questions about it. Because then it would have been two first-round picks instead of, you know, a codified player that has a track record in the NBA as Buddy Hield does. And it just would have looked a lot better had it been executed in that time frame. But since they waited till the season and that first-round pick was translated into a player with a codified record, I can understand why fans didn't feel as good. I thought the night of the trade, I had to talk myself into it. You know, I had a knee-jerk reaction. I was like, oh, that's not enough. That's You know, you expect to get at least a name back for DeMarcus Cousins. No shade to Tyreek, but, you know, you want to get at least somebody that may not step into the franchise cornerstone, but somebody that can help the next franchise cornerstone. And I don't know that we even got that, which is, I don't know. And like you said, Buddy Hield is he's a nice piece. It's just I don't think people expected DeMarcus Cousins to bring in that return. And then you look at the behind-the-scenes drama from what we understand, given the reporting, and it seems like Vlade didn't have a very large window to trade DeMarcus. He was afraid that Vivek would change his mind. And, you know, that's a whole different aspect of the conversation, right?
That's a front office conversation, and then there's so many different directions that conversation can go into. But Joe, I want to get you back here on the show. Has your mindset changed at all since you've now seen the team? I mean, our initial reaction, you and I both agreed, the haul that they got for DeMarcus Cousins was small. We were okay with DeMarcus Cousins being traded, but are you finding yourself? Have you talked yourself into saying that this trade is okay?
Now I'm going to sound like the eternal optimist that you always paint me as, but for the first time all year watching this team, I've been excited. I've been excited to see Willie and Scal and Buddy and hopefully soon see Malachi out there. And even Ben's been playing well. But to see these young kids coming up and to know that there's at least a high probability of getting two kids around the six range in this draft, the team has the ability to move forward. Now, you know, it's hard to say, are you okay with the trade and the value they got back? Because, well, I don't know all the moving pieces. I don't know how long Vivek was going to be okay with trading him. I don't know, you know, how much his agent influenced other teams not wanting to be involved. There's a lot of pieces in this that are hard to pin down an exact quantifiable number and say, you know, his agent caused this much damage, Vlade did this much, whatever. It doesn't matter, but at the end of the day, are you more or less excited about the team right now than you were before? And I'd say more. I'm more excited about where the Kings are and where the Kings can go with this current roster and with the potential in this draft in the next 2 or 3 years. I see more hope than I did before.
And on top of that, this team, with what Vlade has done, whether people like the deal or not, he's shaped the team to flow within the modern NBA sense. And that's why I say for basketball reasons, I completely understand the trade. I love DeMarcus Cousins. I thought he had a great impact on the court. I think in the modern NBA, a player like him is going to drag your team down unless you have a whole scheme centered on him. And then, you know, then you bring up, okay, well, you can't have a scheme centered on him because he can't stay on the floor. So that's you know, for basketball reasons, I completely understand the trade. And gosh, you know, Scal Labissiere has benefited the most, I think, out of anybody from the open floor that DeMarcus left behind. And he has gotten me so excited about the future of this franchise.
Could not agree more. That kid played lights out yesterday and has been playing. Man, in the minutes he's getting, if you're not getting excited, if you're even remotely a Kings fan or even just an NBA fan, and you're not getting excited watching that, you need a defibrillator because they're coming up strong, man. These young kids are coming up strong. Fourth quarter, they're still diving for the ball, whether they're up or down 10 points with a minute left. Doesn't matter. They're still diving for the ball. They're putting in that effort. They're putting in that work, and yet, you know, I guess I'm easily swayed to the positive side of things, but will the community miss a guy like DeMarcus who seemed to be an amazing person? He did amazing things in the community. He was a nice guy. You know, you can say all these things, but like you said, Kamani, it's from a basketball point of view, this move made sense and it's working. The process is working as you see these young kids getting the minutes and as you see them progressing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was fully on board with the trade. I mean, I thought the trade was of trading DeMarcus Cousins was fine. It's the haul that they got in return being such a question mark. And maybe you're right. Maybe if they traded him at draft time last season, and they got two first-round picks. Maybe this trade looks a lot better, like you said, Kamani, and I don't remember who initially said that, but I do remember someone coming out saying that. But it's something for me. It's where you waited till the end of the season to make this decision, where you still have a full another year with DeMarcus Cousins, and let's say they made the playoffs. They don't make the playoffs, but they get close to there. I don't see why, and I know people are going to say, oh, his value was at a low point. When teams are at that tipping point, right, where they have to make a decision for their franchise moving forward, they're at draft day, and they find out DeMarcus Cousins is on the table, things change. Things happen. You've heard Adrian Wojnarowski say that. You've heard all the ESPN analysts say that when draft time comes, people make rash decisions because they want to change the better of their franchise. And whether that's good or bad with DeMarcus Cousins, that's what they're going to do. So I think if they would have waited out, they could have got a bigger return. But again,
I agree with that.
What you're missing there, Vince, though, is would Vivek have still been willing to trade him at that point?
And you know, the other thing is,
but that's a whole lot of conversation, though.
Had to come back with Brandon Ingram or Buddy Hield. Otherwise, it wasn't going to be a trade. I don't know if that detail got lost in all the reporting, but Vivek pretty much said if you don't come back with one of these two young players, and Brandon Ingram or Buddy Hield, then you know it's not going to be a deal. So Vlade did what he could given the parameters of the situation.
Right, and that's where it comes back to where I believe Mitch Kupchak was let go because he wasn't able to get DeMarcus Cousins in that type of deal. And of course, you know, that's rumors and reporting there. But I agree. I just think that if you would have waited a little bit longer, those same players would have been on the table and you would have gotten more because the Pelicans, think about it. There's already reports coming out that if Gentry doesn't start stepping up this team, he's going to be let go. But then they can have the chance to have DeMarcus Cousins for this year's first pick and then still try and find a way to bring in Drew Holiday and have another year to try and re-sign DeMarcus Cousins to a max deal. I mean, there's so many different ways it could have turned out to where the return could have been better.
Playoffs with DeMarcus Cousins. I'll just say that right now.
I don't think so either. I think Denver's got it. And I don't think they have it. I want them
I think
to
next
have
year
it.
Too, I don't think DeMarcus Cousins is going – I think he'll have to go to the Eastern Conference if he wants to contend.
Well, hello, Washington.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's start talking about – I would love to see that too. I would love to see reunited John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, because I think that would be the funnest team to watch. That'd become my new favorite Eastern Conference team. John Wall's already my favorite point guard in the league. Anyways, let's start talking about the team that's here now, right? You guys already brought up Scalabi Sierre and how he's just constantly starting to get better and better with each game. And yesterday set a career high 27 points and also finished that with a double double. We also saw Papa Giannis. 13 minutes, 3 blocks, 3 rebounds. He's starting to get some minutes out there. We're starting to see these young guys really start developing here. But we're also seeing on the flip end of this, and I don't think a lot of people are talking about it, is that they're going to start carouseling these veterans on who gets the night off, who gets to play, who's getting minutes. Come on, I'm going to ask you this. I mean, you're around the guys every single day. Is that something that they knew after a certain point or after that DeMarcus Cousins trade that this was the game plan moving forward to start – letting these young guys come in, and is that going to start affecting their mindset? Because a lot of these guys are heading into free agency this year. Darren Collison, Ty Lawson, all these guys. So in the locker room, did they kind of know that this was going to happen?
You know, that's a good question. I can bring that to the table next time I'm in the locker room. But my sense of it is that Papa Giannis didn't expect to play this season at all. I know Scal was struggling earlier, and I think he's taken – that's how you take advantage of an opportunity once you get it is what he's doing right there. You know, for any kind of players that need to pay attention to the NBA to learn, that's exactly what you do. I'm thoroughly impressed with Scal. But I think at the same time, Vince, they're earning these minutes. You know, it's part development, but part of it is they're playing well. It'd be one thing if we saw Scal out there for 25 minutes and he ends up with 4 points and 4 rebounds and 3 turnovers, which we've unfortunately seen from this team before. You know, we've lived through Jason Thompson. We've lived through a lot of players on Mikey Moore, you know, so
Hey, don't bring up my two favorite players' names and laugh. Come on, now JT was the man.
And Mikey, JT's
you,
awesome.
You can't be mad at the hair that Mikey Moore used to have.
But I'm just saying, if you're going out and playing 25 minutes of NBA basketball, your return has to be higher than, mid the four
mediocre,
and four.
Mediocre play.
Yeah, and Scal is he's turning it. In terms of expected play time, I think Ty Lawson is one of the guys that is probably the most affected by the trade because I think he thought this season would go a lot better for himself. I think that he thought the Kings would retain DeMarcus the whole season and that we would be right there in the mix for that eighth seed. And, Ty was hoping to get in the playoffs and maybe win a game or two and redeem his career. And unfortunately, that's not what's going to happen. Darren, I'd like to see them bring back Darren. Although, I mean, you never know. I don't know if he'd want to come back at this point, but I would like to see them bring him back, but I think that he might be one of those sneaky players in free agency this year that ends up getting way more money than he should. So
he's a quality backup player. I mean, yeah. I'm a huge Darren Collison fan. I know there's like a little shadow over him, or a cloud over him because of what happened during the off season, but I mean, I think he's taken the hit to the chin. He talked about it as soon as he was able to return, and I'm a Darren Collison apologist. I'm a huge fan of his game. I love the way he plays and the heart that he brings to each game. You brought up Ty Lawson. I think Ty Lawson has played so much better than when he started the year to where he is now. I think he has rejuvenated his career. I think that what he did in Sacramento, what he was planning to do in Sacramento, was to show everyone in the league that he can still play and that he can be either. I think he's a really good backup point guard also. I think he's like a tier under Darren Collison, and there's going to be people that debate me on that, and that's fine. But I think that Ty Lawson's definitely going to find his place on a different team next year, but at the same time, I can see the Kings retaining him just to say, hey, you're cheaper than Collison.
Yeah.
You played nice. Your defensive energy was there at times. But let me ask you this, because I don't know if you saw it, but there's a report that he's going to have to go to court because he failed another test or something like that. Or do you know anything about
it? I think it was that he didn't report to his probation officer.
Oh, he didn't report to his probation officer? Oh, okay. So
some kind of incident, something like that. I honestly couldn't tell you dead on, because doing what I do, I get to stay away from some of that drama.
Yeah, you get the best of it.
And that's a choice. And I would like to see them bring back. I would prefer Darren over Ty, but Ty will be less expensive, and I think he has better rapport with the screen and roll with these younger guys. But
yeah, with Willie Cauley-Stein especially.
Yeah. Yeah, he really helps out Willie a lot. I'm excited for Willie's development, too.
But Willie's been outstanding. You have to applaud him, because he started off the season in the Jaeger system just clueless. And now, like, he almost looked robotic. I can't remember who said that, but he looked robotic. And I was that's 100% true, because he would either get the ball, bring it up to the high post, and then decide where he was passing it, and then he'd be lost. He wouldn't know what to do. Now he's setting that pick, and he's rolling to the basket hard. They're actually setting plays for him. And Joe, let me ask you this. Do you think we have to take these games with all these young players, Willie, Scal, Buddy, a little bit with a grain of salt? Because I feel like we've seen stuff like this before. And I'm going to bring up Ben McLemore, because with Ben McLemore a few years back, I believe it was his first or second year, it was these last 15 games. You can even bring up a guy like David Stockton, where they started playing out of their minds. But again, it wasn't up to the talent of what they normally play against in the beginning of the season. So do we have to just kind of take some of these games with a grain of salt, Joe?
You know, I'd say no, just because there's a lot of teams still fighting for their playoff lives right now, and they are trying to play hard. There's a couple of games that you could watch and say, hey, both teams are, in quote-unquote tank mode. And so those games, I guess just some games you can watch and take 100%, and some you should definitely take with a grain of salt. And I would use the, who's still in the playoff hunt would be my would be my qualifying remark on that. Anytime they're playing a team that's still in the hunt, take it seriously. And if you're playing, you know, a Philly or an LA, all right, you know, it's an exhibition match at that point.
Come on, now let's start moving just the things you actually do over there at Sacktown Royalty, and that's taking the pictures. You're the photographer over there. You said you've been doing it for 5 years. So what does that entail you to do? Because I've been in the game. I saw you. You're constantly moving around. You're constantly looking to get a good picture. And by the way, your pictures are amazing. But what do you go into each game with, like, a game plan of, like, what you're trying to get that day? Or is it kind of just in the moment, I see a shot, I have to take it?
Well, I will say that I do my research before every game. So I have to do a little advanced scouting. I have to know who's hot coming into the game for the other team. So
I was about to say, I mean, you must be looking at me every time I walk into the building. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of it, Vince. But I'll tell you, like, if I didn't know who Seth Curry was, for example, the Mavs would come into town, I'd do a little advanced research. I'd say, okay, well, Seth Curry's been on fire since the All-Star break. I'm going to have to focus a couple minutes on him during the game and make sure I get a good shot in case he lights us up. So that's kind of the way I think. This season I've been doing a content series that it's called the NBA Lens Face, and it's on Facebook, Instagram, all those things. And I was focusing on the experience of being, of taking these photos and being responsible for that. And then I've also given, on a couple of those episodes, I've given thorough photography tips. You know, how do you shoot from the stands, for example, a high angle? How do you use the rule of thirds? How do you track live action with a lens that doesn't autofocus? Things like that. My main preparation in going into the game is, one, making sure I know where I can be, because you see me moving around so much. Well, that's because we don't stay in one spot throughout the whole game. And if I do that, I'm probably going to be up top with the video cameras. Because the NBA has requirements for how many aides are supposed to be on the baseline now in terms of towel people. And that increased. It went up from 2 to 4. So now they have to have 2 on each baseline, which takes up the photographer spots. So a couple of us that are affiliated with not primary content platforms like Sacktown Royalty or Cowbell Kingdom, we rotate in for a couple of quarters on the floor spots when we can. And then, you know, I'll go around the arena to other spots that are designated for photography. And then occasionally, if it's a slow game and there might be some empty seats, I can find a place to shoot from in the stands.
I was going to ask you. You said you come in with your game plan. So let me ask you this: you're doing the advance on a lot of these players to find out who's hot. So when you're taking the pictures, knowing the game actually really does matter, is what you're saying. Like, you have to know how each team is kind of doing, so you can kind of start having a game plan of what players you need to look at. I just want to make sure I got that right.
Well, that's part of it, but I would say that you have to be basically with your advanced scouting or whatever, however you want to apply that for the game. You have to know the whole situation. So if there's any celebrities in the building, you have to know about that. When you're watching the game and you're actually shooting in live action, you don't necessarily pay attention to the ball all the time. I mean, I think some of my best shots have come off the ball in key moments. And that way, you know, I have a shot that I got last year when Rudy dunked all over Patrick Beverly at Sleep Train. And I wasn't going to get a good shot of the actual play. And it was a fast break, and I knew something amazing was going to happen. But Drake was in the building. He's on the baseline next to the Vex. So I just pointed my camera at him to see what his reaction was going to be. And I ended up with a series of shots that turned into a meme, if you will, which I'm kind of sour about when my stuff gets turned into memes, because somehow they find a way to take my name off of it. Yeah, that's why if you see my work this year, I made sure to put watermarks all over everything, because it's happened quite a few times now, at least 5 different occasions where I've taken something and it's been memed or spread out throughout the internet and nobody knows it came from me. So
Well, you said you did the Facebook videos, and the last time I saw you, I believe it was at the Hawks game, and it looked like you were taking a video of the crowd. Is that a shot that you're taking for like maybe later, or is that for your Facebook live group just to kind of give people the taste of the environment and what you're doing in the arena, or was that you just Snapchatting it, or what were you doing with the fans? Because I saw you were doing it from both sides of the arena, just trying to get, you know, the reaction of the fans and how well the team was playing.
I guess what my intent with NBA Lens Face is to provide a texture of the game that fans don't necessarily feel or have access to. Now, I mean, a lot of teams are doing behind-the-scenes Snapchats and things like that, but I'm trying to come at it from a photographer's perspective. And I'll talk to the audience during – I broadcast it live on Snapchat, and then I download all the footage and edit it into something a little nicer. But, yeah, I do shoot the crowd because I try to – you know, I think it's fun if an audience – if somebody's watching a clip that I've done and they can see themselves in the footage. That's part of it. And then fans are a huge part of what we do. You know, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for fans caring about what the staff at STR writes about. And if nobody cares about what they write about, then there's no photo. My photos aren't useful at all. But I like to think that we're all in this together. We're all creating a value from essentially nothing, from a game. And so we, you know, we're all agreeing, we all come together and produce this value together.
Well, okay, well, I have a little bit of a fun question now for you, because, I mean, each basketball game is, what, roughly 3 hours long. You're there for pregame and postgame. Over, under on 100 photos taken before you leave that arena over. After every game?
I'd say I average probably 300 pictures a game.
I actually was going to ask, how do you decide which ones you think are the best, because I know you're not sitting at home editing all 300 of them to be perfect. So how do you pick them? Is it just action? I mean, what's your process there?
Well, I generally I know what the cover photo for the game is going to be, unless it's a really close game, and you know there's a potential game winner on the horizon. So I already have that in the back of my mind. So that's the first picture I get edited. I make sure it's pretty, and I make sure that's in the folder for the guys. And it's kind of a race. You have to get your selects. I use Google Drive, so we use Google Drive at Sacktown Royalty. So I download to my computer. I use Photoshop to do quick edits, and I deposit fairly large JPEGs in the Google Drive folder. And so we call these selects the images that you choose to submit to your platform to represent the game. And I try to end up with 30 to 40 of them. Sometimes it's a really terrible game to shoot, and that can happen for a number of reasons. There's a lot of fouls, so there's just not a lot of action going on, and it basically your shots end up looking like you're shooting wrestling and not basketball. One of my frustrations this season is how many teams have been wearing black at Golden 1 Center. It seems like every other game there's a team in black, and I don't know if y'all have noticed, but the seats in the Golden 1 Center are also black. So, and it's not to say that the arena is empty. It's an arena where you walk around, and they encourage you to walk around and enjoy the space. So what ends up happening is you shoot black uniforms against the blackness of the empty seats, and there's not a lot of contrast there. And that can really sink shots for you. And Rich Pedroncelli from Associated Press and I, you know, we chat about that all the time. And, oh, wow, this shot would have been so great if there was a little bit more definition between the black uniform and the black background. It's the process of getting those selects. You want to get the stars in line first. Well, you want to get your what you think would be a good cover photo up first, and then you go through your star players. So when DeMarcus was still on the team, I would make sure I'd have five or six DeMarcus Cousins shots up after every game, unless somebody else hit a game winner or got a game-winning steal or game-winning block, or whatever the case is. But now it's a little confusing.
Who's going to be the star tonight? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, with DeMarcus, it's actually nice to have a star player like that, because you can shoot off what he's doing. And now we don't have a focal point necessarily like that in the offense. So I don't know where the ball is going to be consistently. I'm starting to pick it up. It's funny. I think photographers would make really great scouting options. Like if some of the teams are looking to expand their scouting ranks, they ought to look at photographers, because we end up picking up on teams' offensive schemes, defensive schemes. We know what's going on the court, how, and even really kind of simple basketball observations, like how a player stands and how a player shoots and how they understand the space. It's
well, Mr. Scout, I have a question for you. 5 seconds left on the clock. Kings down by two. Who are you focusing on with your camera to take that shot? Is it Buddy? Did they tie the game? Does it go to a Aflalo, Garrett Temple? Who do you keep your camera on?
This is where you have to be. This is where you have to understand basketball, because you have to see the play before it's going to happen. So you have to know who's going to be the most likely option to get the ball in that scenario based on the setup before the ball's passed in. So generally, whoever's in the opposite corner is going to be running off that screen to the top, and they usually end up with the ball in that situation. However, I mean, you have to be ready for anything. And that's the other kind of wrinkle. There's been tip-ins that I've missed, game-winning tip-ins that I've missed because I was focusing on the player that shot the ball and I didn't catch who was coming in for the weak side rebound. And you also have to be prepared. You know, you have to make choices. If you're shooting with one camera, I shoot with one camera. Some of the photographers use two. But if you're shooting with one camera, you have to know what lens, what focal range you're going to want to shoot that moment in. I had a shot from the Jazz-Kings game. It was Willie's missed dunk at the end of the game over Gobert. My shot of it turned out great, but that I happened to have my 24 millimeter on and not my 200. My 200 would have given me a terrible, terrible angle at that shot. So I kind of lucked out in that moment, because I don't turn to my 24 in those situations generally, but we looked at the personnel on the floor, and the determination I made is that it was going to be a close range shot, and I was going to be better off with a wide angle in that scenario. And I was right. My shot turned out really nice, and I'm pretty proud of it. But like I said, you know, that's not something that would naturally be the case. Normally, I'd have a lens that zooms in a lot more with a 200 in that situation, which would not have given me the same shot. But you do have, so it's helpful to read the situation and understand, okay, the Kings are down one, Kings are down two. Judging by lineups, Aaron Aflalo's on the floor, Ty Lawson's on the floor, you have Willie. Well, there's most likely going to be a screen to roll, and the shot's going to be inside, so let me make sure I address my equipment and I address my mindset to be prepared for that. You know, that same situation, and it's Darren Collison, Buddy, and Scal, and why am I brain farting? And Tyreek on the floor. You know, I'm going to be prepared for an outside shot in that situation.
Well, a lot of photography is preparation, and then I have to say that some of it is luck. So, of all your shooting, what was your favorite shot that you got? Even if it wasn't a game winner or something, what was the shot in the Kings that was just to you the most amazing?
The most amazing shot, in my opinion, that I've ever gotten was last year. It was when Seth Curry was on the team. And it was actually the first – Seth Curry's been in the NBA for a few years, but this is why you have to look things up. Because Seth Curry and Steph Curry never actually played any NBA minutes against each other. Seth was on when Seth was on Orlando, Steph was hurt. So they actually never lined up on an NBA court against each other until last year, when the Warriors came to play the Kings for the first time. And so Seth Curry checks in the game. This is still early in the season. He wasn't playing very much. Seth Curry checks in the game and immediately goes to guard Steph. And so I'm focused in on them. The ball, Harrison Barnes is about to pass the ball in, but I'm focused on Steph's face. And he cracks, and he's trying to hold it in, but he cracks a really tiny little smile. Just like
a little smirk.
Yeah, just a little smirk. So I have that moment, and that's probably my proudest moment. And it's not high, heavy action. It's just, you know, two brothers standing there, and Seth is standing behind Steph. Gosh, those two names are really hard to say back to back.
Seth.
Well, photography is designed. Photography is designed to tell a story, and that tells a story, and that's why those kind of photos
I've always liked those more than, you know, a dunk is a dunk. Everybody knows to take a picture of that. There's no question that that's, you know, when Willie posterizes somebody, of course, everybody wants to see that. But the story photos are the ones that I like more, where, like you just said, where he's smirking because he's playing against his brother that they've probably lined up 10,000 times against each other on some court in some place, you know, as kids. And now they're both doing it in uniform. And that little smirk tells the story. And that's exactly why I wanted to know what your favorite was, because photos that capture the, you know, the posterizing dunk are the ones that, well, obviously from the name, get made into posters. But the kind like you just told, that's always the ones that I like better, where it's a story.
And I've been trying to get that shot to the Currys for a long time. and yeah, I think that's something that they would appreciate. Well, I know Steph would appreciate it, having a print of that. Because, you know, those moments only ever happen once. I might have been the only person looking at that particular coupling in that instance, because I had a theory before the game. I said, well, you know, I wonder if these guys have ever actually played against each other, because I know that when Steph was with Orlando, Steph was hurt for a good portion of time. And it turns out they never played against each other. And that feeling, that smile that Steph has, we've all had that smile, you know. If it's a sibling or a cousin, and it could be in a video game, but they're lining up to challenge you, and you know you're going to beat that, and you just think it's kind of cute. So that's my favorite shot. I have a couple other ones that I'm really proud of as well. From DeMarcus's second or third season, I have a really emphatic dunk of his that. That is probably the best dunk that I've been able to get him in.
Also, do you have any pictures of the moment from our intro? Like the Tyreek Evans half-court buzzer beater or the DeMarcus Cousins dunk on Danny Green?
I might have the Danny Green slam. The Tyreek Evans shot was right before my time. I was still in Los Angeles. Or I might have been in Santa Cruz, but I wasn't here.
Oh, so you're not a Sacramento, like, born and raised native. You're like a Southern guy.
Let me tell the story. I was raised in a small town called Forest Hill, which is up in Placer County, in Sierra foothills. So that's about 1,400. It's a town of about 1,400, 1,500 people, and most of us are rednecks. So I'm actually super proud of that. I African redneck and all that. It's a rare personality.
Do you ride dirt bikes?
No.
Oh, well, when you get on that level, let me know, because I love riding dirt bikes. And if you have any good places out there in that area, let me know. We can go ride.
I sit down to Mammoth Bar, but I'll tell you, up here we ride mountain bikes, because we don't like, you know, we consider dirt bikes for geriatrics.
I've been to Mammoth Bar a couple times. It's been pretty fun. But thank you so much for coming on our show. I think that's gonna do our time here. But before I let you go, where can the fans find you online, and what can they be expecting from you for the rest of the season?
I'm on Twitter at the Comonsta. That's just my personal Twitter, so don't expect a lot from there. You'll see references to writings that I've done, some political opinions and some basketball opinions. I also am at NBA Lensface on Instagram and Twitter as well. And that Instagram is going to be the best place to find the Lensface material. That's the one channel that I keep it updated the most thoroughly on. And you can find the full clips on Facebook at facebook.com/LMO Productions. And the rest of the season, that's a very good question. There's 6 home games left. I would like to go at it with a very strong theme for each game. I have no idea what that's going to be yet. I had
one of it should be Vince Miracle themed.
I could do that. Yeah.
Take a picture of every person that looks like a Vince.
I like that. I did do, you know, I did a Bradley Geyser themed one. And so I guess if I do one themed on Brad, I just kind of opens the gate.
I have to ask you this question before I shoot it over to Jeff for his final thoughts and where people can find him. Favorite Magic iPod mix? What's the one you go to when you're on that site? You're like, this is the jam I have to listen to.
I really liked Vanessa Carlton and 99 Problems.
I'm just glad you didn't do DMX and Make My Way Downtown or whatever that song was.
No, the DMX sounds better with Modest Mouse.
Yeah, see, everyone was talking about the Make My Way Downtown. I don't like that. I like anything mixed with Stacey's Mom was my favorite. That didn't come out right. But that mix was my favorite one. But thank you so much for coming on. Come on.
I have one more, and this is the one that you have to do. It's Ludacris and White Stripes, Seven Nation Army plus Move, Bitch. That one is—that's the one that you have to do because it's like it's high. That's
should
high
that be our, should that be our outro music, Joe? Just the Magic iPod.
Yeah, I'm sure that would go over really well. All the advertisers would love it if you were playing, you know, inappropriate. We're not allowed to cuss on the air, and then we just play that going out.
We'll add the beeps. Move. Beep.
You played DMX with beeps. That's all you'd hear. There'd be no rhythm. All right.
All right, Joe. Where can the fans find you online?
You can find me at SackSportsMorgan on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere. Just look up SackSportsMorgan. I'll show up.
Just died. But you guys can follow him on all social media platforms of at SackSportsMorgan. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms of at VMCenter. Go follow the Kamonsta on Twitter and LensFaze NBA. Thank you so much again, Kamani, for joining the show. Joe, thanks so much for being here. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, bye-bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.